This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Ng Teck. My guest today is Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajesh Vijayakaran, back for his monthly show, this time about public policies. Today we're going to be discussing Activism 101, in other words, how to engage this government in Malaysia Baharu more effectively. Rajesh Vijayakaran, if you did not know, was also recently appointed to the Ministry of Energy, Technology, Science, Climate Change and Environment as a special officer to the newly minted minister you'll be in. Rajesh, congratulations on that and welcome back.
Thank you, and it's good to be back.
So this topic, I guess, was we discussed what we wanted to talk about this month, and you thought it would be a good idea to do this show because of the enthusiasm that people have showed about how they can help or contribute or want to do what to the new government. As I guess to get your sense of why you want to do this, as an Adun, you have one term experience in the State Assembly of Selangor dealing with activists, NGOs, as well as the Barisan government. What has been your own experience engaging with civil society?
Well, I would say that civil society, NGOs in Malaysia, they're not bad. They're pretty focused. Most NGOs know what they want. Most NGOs are very specific in their area of work, and they do go out and engage at least us in Harapan, and I'm sure they also engage those on the side of BN as well in the previous years. But I think what has changed now is that I personally see lots and lots of Malaysians excited with this change of government, and they want to be part of this change. They see changes being announced. I think the ministers that were first sworn in just after the elections were making a lot of announcements every day. The news coverage has been exciting. I think there's never been a dull news day. There's so much of Malaysian news floating around WhatsApp. You know, that's one way I can judge it, because I'm on so many resident groups. You've normally got tips and tricks and how to make sure you don't get scammed and what cures cancer. Those kind of things normally are prevalent in a lot of WhatsApp chat groups, but a lot more Malaysian news, what this minister said, what that minister said, what announcements are being made, that has been flowing through conversations, Facebook and WhatsApp. That goes to show that Malaysians care, Malaysians are interested, Malaysians are excited, that they really do see change happening. I mean, no doubt some people feel the change can be faster. Some people may not agree with every aspect of change. But generally, there is a surge of excitement at the change that's happening. And one of the things that comes out of this surge of excitement is that we've had lots of people interested in volunteering. People who text me, message me, call me, or meet me on the streets and tell me that, how can I volunteer? How can I help? And I think it's not just what I encounter, but all my colleagues, it's what they encounter too. People just want to help. People right. are not looking to get paid. People are not looking for projects. They just want to help.
Mm-hmm. So how much of this, they are vocal, they are excited, and how much of your agenda then as a politician is driven by what activists or even people on the streets are advocating for, and how much of it is you trying to shepherd or lead the conversation on this?
I don't think that's really that big of an issue. Definitely, we have a very clear agenda for the next 5 years, and this elections has been unique in the sense that we did put a very comprehensive manifesto, a very comprehensive action plan, like 200 pages thick. Plenty of promises. I think very few listeners out there would have read this document in full. You would have read newspaper articles about sections of the document, but very few would have read it in full. But it's out there, it's published, it's online, you can download it, you can get it in multiple languages. And the reason for that is that this is every elections, we try to do one better. And we've tried to get our act together better to demonstrate to Malaysians that we are ready to govern. And this time, that comprehensive manifesto outlines the plans that we have to undertake. So I think if we just stay focused on that, we would have our work cut out for us. There's just plenty of work to do to get those promises fulfilled. I think you had a manifesto tracker here on BFM a few weeks ago, and he has built a system to track, I think, over 300 to 400 promises that were made. And that is something that I welcome. It's really serious, because I am dead serious that my party has to achieve what we have set out to do. So that's the agenda. Of course, there's plenty of engagement in how we go about it. I think the aspirations that were highlighted in the manifesto were the aspirations. You know, you want to get that goal done. The question is, how do we get there? And that's where a lot of engagement comes in. Mm-hmm. And when people in the industry, people who are stakeholders, who are consumers in a particular area, are giving us lots of feedback. And I welcome that, because that just sharpens our plans, you know. The more feedback we get, it just helps us to sharpen our plans. Now, you know, sometimes we can't reply to, sometimes we miss out replying on every single email or every single text message. But on my end, I do my best to read every single text message I get, every single Facebook comment I get, just to get to know what people feel, because I need to get, I always need to have the pulse right. So,
do you think that is an accurate pulse or accurate sample size of the, of what people are thinking?
No, because it's not so much a referendum in every decision that you make. If you're doing a referendum, then yes, you need to conduct it scientifically right, and you need to conduct it properly. But this is not so much a referendum. This is just being sensitive to feedback. And generally, people who are affected are the ones that are giving you feedback. And many people may not necessarily have feedback to give you, because in that particular area, they are not affected. They are neutral with regards to whichever decision or whichever mechanism you go. So, for example, when you want to change parameters for example, emissions, that, you know, what can factories emit? There are a lot of people who have no opinion on this, and it's fine, because many people are not well versed in this. But stakeholders who are involved can start to give feedback, and then they will say that, you know, this requirement is too stringent. And in fact, compare us with comparable countries around the world to say that your requirements are too stringent or your requirements are too lax, and this is what we propose. So we take in the ideas. We may not agree with everyone. We may not do what everyone wants. In the end, we have to make the judgment call, and we are answerable every election cycle. But we want to listen. So I think that is good, that people want to share feedback. So you've got people just want to give feedback. That's great. And that's appreciated. You got people who want to do stuff. They want to help. They want to be part of it. That may be a bit more challenging. You know, how do you manage an army of volunteers? I think that's one of the challenges we have. We don't want people to feel that their help is not valued. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges in the last 2 months. How do I make sure that everyone who comes up to me and says that, you know, I want to help, I want to volunteer, what do I do now, what do I do next, and how do I channel that right, so that they don't feel like I'm not wanted, or, you know, I'm not needed? Because that's a horrible feeling, to make someone feel that way.
Feedback is what we are looking forward to on the show. Our phone lines are open. You can call 03-7710-9000. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. You can tell us, maybe, do you feel your state rep or MP has been responsive whenever you sent out a text or wrote an email or spoke to them at a town hall, whether requests or promises made has been followed up. So, Rajiv, you alluded to the fact that you receive an influx of a lot of messages on WhatsApp, Facebook. It's probably not humanly possible to go through all of them. How much of your time is devoted to communication? Because I think activists or civil society or just your constituents, what they want to see most of all is that there's action or movement on whatever you promise or whatever you said that you're going to do. So just doing your job, I guess, is not good enough. You have to tell people that you're working on this. How much of your time, you know, during a waking hours that do you spend just answering feedbacks, telling people, giving status updates and so forth?
That's a very interesting question. Maybe I should get an app on my phone to track how much time I spend on the various different things. I estimate quite a fair bit, maybe 3 to 5 hours a day is spent communicating. I think getting the message out is the easier part because you're more in control of that. You're more in control of the press conferences that you do or the statements that you make. That's the easier part. I think the harder part is engaging people who want to engage with you. So to reply every email that comes to me, that's more time-consuming. To reply every WhatsApp message that comes, that's more time-consuming and that takes up time. And also to make time to physically meet people who want to meet you face to face, so that's also challenging. So like I've made that part easier, that those who need to see me face to face for a complaint, a suggestion, an idea, or just to see what I look like, you can do that every Wednesday night. So every Wednesday night, I'm in my office from 7:30 to 10. So yeah, you know, anyone, no restriction, no filters. You can walk in and meet me, and I will talk to you, and I will hear you out, whatever the reason is that you're coming. And it it's not restricted to Bukit Gasing residents. It's just open. I mean, generally, Bukit Gasing residents are the one who comes, but you know, it's still open. Mm-hmm. So that's how I try to manage it. So I try to tell people that I do understand that sometimes I can't be giving appointments all day, every day, because then there's no time to get any work done. Because after you meet me, you convey the opinion, the suggestion, and if I like it, I agree with it, it's something I want to work on, I need to be able to work on it as well. So it's always tough. I think every politician, not just in Malaysia, but around the world, would struggle to balance this. It's something that I'm working on and learning how to do better every day.
Yeah, that's the perception that we have of ministers, right, our politicians. How much of it, of the duty, is ceremonial and how much of it is actual substantive policy work? Let's take a short break. I'm speaking today to Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman, talking about Activism 101, or how to engage government more effectively. After the break, I'll ask him more about how he intends to address dissent and criticism. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Trot and Tick. With me in the studio today, Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. We're talking about Activism 101, or how to engage government. If you have a feedback or you'd like to contribute to the conversation, our phone lines are open. You can call us at 03-7710-9000, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So I guess the euphoria is kind of plateauing now. People are getting used to how things are done. We're coming up to the 100-day mark also. And if you get stopped on the streets, for example, with people saying, hey, I'd like to be involved in this change, what would be your suggestion to them? Like, because you can't be seen as a person giving out jobs, or, you know, it's also not reasonable, I guess, for you to take on an army of volunteers and manage them and put them to unpaid labor. What would you say? I guess.
I mean, we're happy to take on volunteers. Let's be clear on that. I think a lot of people want to help. They're just looking to help. They want to be part of the solution, and it's not about money. It's just about, you know, a sense of love for the country. People just want to be part of making things better. And I think the first thing I would like to say to this group, if you're interested, you want to know how you can do something, you don't know where to start, is maybe the first to start with yourself. It's just to know, to ask yourself a couple of simple questions of what exactly do you want to do? And it basically comes down to, do you want to be giving advice because you feel you have certain experience or expertise in an area, and you want to give advice to the ministers or exco members, members of parliament, state assemblymen in that area. It could be human resource, it could be environment, it could be technology, it could be tourism, countless areas. There are hundreds of government departments, you know, so much of things that government does, so much of things that government regulates. So if you think of an expert experience or expert opinion and you think you could be of help, so that's one. The other one is you just want to be part of a solution. All right. So in the second one, let's talk about the second category first. Then the question, if you could help explore within yourself, is that what do you really want to do? For a start, not all solutions have to come from politicians. Now, sometimes NGOs can be the better track to fulfill, to contribute back to society. There's just so much of ways you can contribute back to society through the existing NGOs that are out there. You've got NGOs that are into welfare, NGOs into environment, NGOs that are into media. Basically, nearly every aspect that you would like to help out in, I'm sure you can find an NGO. Especially if you're listening on air in here in the Klang Valley, this is where the central hub of NGOs are. It's a bit harder if you're out there in, say, Kedah, Terengganu, or Malacca, but here in KL, in the Klang Valley, it's a bit more geographically accessible for you to get in touch with NGOs. So you can do a simple internet search, Google search, Facebook search, to see if there are NGOs out there that you can join. You can also be starting your own NGO. That's not too difficult, actually. You can... the key step is to find two or three other like-minded people and you can get moving with that to decide that, okay, this is our objective. You know, let's say our objective is that, okay, we need a greener Malaysia and we need a more, we need Malaysia that's not so wasteful and not throwing so much rubbish in the landfill. So one method was the first one, the advisory method. So you want to get in touch with the Minister for Local Government and Housing and try to get through to her and give her advice on how you can, how the ministry can do it better. That is one way, but that's not the only way you can help. And there are many NGOs that are working on environmental, not just activism, but actually projects. So you can work on various different projects that actually make an impact in communities. Now, some of these are maybe a smaller scale, not national or statewide. It could just be in one particular community, but you could be working on something right here and now, tangible, that makes a difference to the environment. So you could join an NGO or you could start an NGO of your own. Find two or three other like-minded people. Maybe you decide that composting is a key step forward because nearly 40 to 50% of our waste is food waste. And if we channel all that food waste into composting, we can drastically reduce the amount of rubbish going to landfills. And so if we, you know, you can get out there with a few people that are like-minded. And as you start promoting this or start getting neighborhoods to adopt composting, you get more and more members joining your NGO who latch on to your vision and your passion. And you can already make a difference. So I think this new government wants to see NGOs flourish. So if you're doing community work, social enterprise, NGO work, you would have a fertile ground to operate in. You won't. I really want to see that continue to grow. I will definitely stand on your side and speak out against government if government starts to restrict you or make life difficult for you or put in unnecessary red tape for you. So that is one way to go. So we've talked about joining an existing NGO. You know, and we talked about the example of environment, but this would apply to other examples as well. We talked about starting your own NGO, joining existing NGO. But I think the hardest one, the most challenging one, is the advisory one. So maybe I've spent a couple of minutes talking about the advisory one. People like to go for the minister first because no doubt the minister is the most powerful and has the biggest burden of decision-making with regards to their respective portfolios. And to be realistically to be realistic about it, the minister wouldn't have time to listen to every single person who thinks that they are an expert. I'm not saying you're not an expert, but we have a lot of people who are genuine experts and people who may be who think they are experts. So it's a bit time-consuming to go through all of that, and you shouldn't be. I hope you won't be offended if you don't get through to your respective minister, just because everything's working so fast. There's so much of things to get done. There's so much of decisions to make. There's so much of programs to do, and thus it's challenging.
We have a question from a listener asking, what's the best channel for an NGO to reach the government to make sure that their suggestion or proposal will be heard?
Yeah, all right. So this is pretty close to that. All right. So you can still reach out to the minister's office. That's one. Sometimes you should also do a bit of research. Is your issue statewide or national? If your issue has a state jurisdiction, you can also reach out to your state EXCO in charge of that area. Let's stick to the example of the environment one. And if you want to push for more green initiatives, environment is a shared responsibility in federal and state government. So you could also engage your state representative, your state EXCO in charge of environment. You can also engage members of parliament and state assemblymen. Now, they are not the ones running the departments. So if you could bear that in mind, your engagement can be very fruitful to know that you can engage them to try to get them to advocate certain things. So, you know, Parliament is sitting right now. MPs can actually stand up to advocate for certain things. So if you can, one way is to go to the minister. Another way is you can go to an MP and engage the MP. And normally it's easiest for you to get access to your local MP. Your local MP should have some platform to meet his constituents, his residents, just like how I do on Wednesday night. Your MP probably is doing the same. So you can meet your MP and convey this to your MP, and your MP could then carry this voice in Parliament on your behalf. So these are the ways that you can move if, you know, advisory is the way you want to go. Now, if you're into activism, now, so either individually or through an NGO and you want to be an activist, I think the very basic is you must be in constant communication. You know, email your proposals in, write them in to put them on the record. Even though you can't secure a meeting, don't be discouraged by that. At least put in your proposals in writing. So it's there, it's on the record, and someone in the minister's office is bound to be reading it, you know. So maybe it might take you a couple of months to get an appointment, if you get an appointment, but at least put them in writing and don't just be one off. You know, feel free to constantly put them in. All right, so that's the basic. Then the other part is you should also engage society, because when you want to push for a policy change, that's what most activism is about, pushing for a policy change. There are two ways it happens. One is, as we talked about earlier in the show, the minister, the EXCO member leads the change, tries to tell everyone that, you know what, we should be using less plastic bags, and so we're going to create this policy and charge it 20 cents for every plastic bag because we want to make you use less plastic bags. So it was a top-down policy. Maybe some people pushed for it, maybe not so much. We've got to ask Elizabeth Wong on that. But it was a more top-down policy. It could also be a bottom-up policy where the NGO focuses their activism efforts on getting Malaysians interested and getting Malaysians to demand for this policy change. And if there is ground movement, I tell you, politicians pay attention to that. So if you can get ground movement towards a particular cause, say the next step may be plastic straws. So if they say someone creates ground movement towards banning plastic straws, single-use plastic straws, then that could be an alternative. So you could try to lobby EXCO members to get respective states to do away with plastic straws the way some states have done away with plastic bags. Or you could get ground support for this, get the ground to demand for it. So there are basically two ways to tackle it. And NGOs or individuals or passionate should be aware of this and should consider both ways. And it's not exclusive. You should do both.
Do you make a distinction between activism and lobbying? I ask because one of the easiest way for someone to contribute is through Tabung Harapan. And more and more so, corporations have been contributing to this Tabung. And corporations like property developers who, you know, would require land to build houses or buildings, and palm oil industries who require extensive engagement with the government. This is seen as goodwill, it's seen as CSR, but I guess optics is another thing. Do you make that distinction between lobbying and activism?
I think Malaysia has not come down to define the difference between lobbying or activism, or what constitutes lobbying, or whether lobbying is good or bad. But personally, I think I would say how we can label lobbying and how we can label activism is beneficiaries. So I would consider lobbying is that people who are advocating for something that is to their self-interest. For example, someone lobbying for a piece of property development rights or a piece of land, you know, for himself or his company, or lobbying for, say, emission controls to be amended so that his factory has an easier time doing business. So that's lobbying. So that's what I would consider lobbying. And activism is more towards advocating for a change of policy for the general good. So you don't have a particular financial interest in that change of policy. So when an NGO goes and tells the government that you need to put more buses on the roads, the current 1,500 buses in the Klang Valley is not sufficient, and you need to put in 5,000 to 10,000 buses, which is what I used to do as an NGO before I became a state assemblyman, that's activism. But if a bus producer, a bus manufacturer goes to the government and says, buy 5,000 new buses, then probably that's lobbying, because he has a financial interest for the government to make that decision. So I guess I'll differentiate that way. And I think those who lobby already know how to lobby. They've been lobbying since day one. And probably somewhere down the line, we really need to come up with clear guidelines to govern lobbying.
Yeah. Another development since May 9 has also been the co-opting of expertise from civil society. So we've seen that with the Council of Eminent Persons, for example, or even the Institutional Reforms Committee. Do you see this as the lines between, you know, activists and politicians blurring? Is this encouraging or disquieting development?
I think this is very niche. I think this affects in the larger scale of people wanting to be involved. This is just a very, very, very small amount. It's understandable, and I think it's admirable that ministers or the prime minister has councils of elders, respected people to advise, not to run things, but to advise, to give an opinion. And we have a lot of new ministers. A lot of new ministers have set up their own council of advisors, and I think that's great. I mean, it's always a good thing to have someone giving you a second opinion before you make the decision is finally still at the minister's hand or at cabinet's hand. But it's always good to have a council of people who are respected in that particular industry to give advice. I think so. I don't think it's a bad thing. But I think very few of those who are interested to help get in, find their way into such councils. So this is more towards everyone else. You may not be known today, but you may have a heart to get involved. I think one of the areas besides environment that is very popular is education. So you can get yourself involved. We talked about the various different ways you could get involved.
I think more likely than not, you get most of your feedback virtually. So there are a lot of keyboard warriors out there, or even cyber troopers. If they
touchscreen warriors these days.
Touchscreen warriors. How do you treat trolls or even people who are critical of government actions?
First of all, I really don't know how we can define a difference between a troll and an angry constituent. Just because someone's angry doesn't mean I dismiss them. But I think it's all about the content. People who just say DAP pig, I think that one we can just put aside. Plenty of people on Facebook just put that in reply to whatever you say on Facebook. So those are trolls. Those you just put aside. But angry people, then it just comes down to what they're saying. So if you leave a comment on a Facebook post that I put up, I will read your comment. And I will take into account what you're saying. If you go way off topic, and then I may dismiss it because it's just not relevant. But I'll take note of all the sentiments, because that's, to me, that's important for me to do my job. I really want to know. I genuinely want to know what's the sentiment out there. Mm-hmm. Even though they are painful decisions and people are angry at it, but it's still good to know that painful sentiment, that angry sentiment out there, because I still need to navigate through it.
How active are you in managing your social media presence or your even just media relations operation?
Admittedly, of the last ever since the change of government, it's been very, very challenging, just because of the flood. Actually, WhatsApp has been the biggest flood of the biggest surge of messages as compared to the past, and so time just gets caught up responding to people. So yeah, I'll be the first to admit that I've a lot to improve. Now that I've taken on an additional role, that takes up even more time. But I've got to find ways to do that. So that's an area I need to improve on.
Yeah. Do town hall helps? Because as part of your new role, you were recently part of a town hall.
Yes. We do town hall meetings, because those are effective ways to get a collection of views. So sometimes when you hear a person one-to-one, he gives you a statement or an opinion or a suggestion, and you do not know how valuable or how much society or the stakeholders agree with that opinion. So a town hall helps you measure that. Every time someone takes the mic and says something, you judge by the claps that or the reaction from the crowd. There are many comments that there's, you know, indifferent reaction, and people are like, hurry up and get off the mic. And you know that, okay, this is... You don't disregard the opinion, but you know that this is a smaller opinion. And then there's some comments that you just get thunderous applause throughout the hall, and you know that, you know, everyone feels very strongly about this. You know, I need to pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. So things like town halls, even though not everyone takes the mic, but you still can get a good sense, a better sense of what the opinion of the industry is as compared to having 10 one-on-one meetings. Mm-hmm. So... 1 3-hour town hall can give you more value than maybe 50 one-on-one meetings.
Mm-hmm. So what will be your, I guess, priorities going forward? One would be handling communication better. what would you be prioritizing now that you have this new role to balance and juggle?
Well, The role in Bukit Gasing remains. We are still an advocate for the residents. As your assemblyman, I'm still around. I'm still doing the same thing that we've been doing for the last 5 years. In fact, we have beefed up the office. We've hired one new person to add to the staff to cater to the extra interest the public is having. And we are continuously taking on cases, helping people resolve issues. And we are currently working out some plans with the EXCO members. I think we'll come down to it when we get things ripe and ready. But in broad pictures, I think business, ease of doing business has been something that in the last 10 years we've not paid enough attention to. It's not to say that it's going to take a priority over other concerns, but I think it's something that needs to rise up to be equal with other concerns that we've been having. So we need to take into account ease of doing business, and that should be helpful to spur the economy, to spur local businesses, small businesses, micro businesses, and to spur the economy as a whole. We are on track with water reform, the water restructuring. That's definitely a big priority for the coming 5 years. We need to make sure that we remain disciplined on track. We are going to launch in Bukit Gasing a water conservation drive. We've talked about this before on the show. If we keep up our high consumption rates in Malaysia, it's over 230 to 260 litres per person per day, as compared to, say, Singapore, closer to 150 litres. Thailand's also closer to Singapore levels. Malaysia's extra high. We're just enjoying our water. So comparing with our neighbors who have the similar culture and similar lifestyles and similar weather. We're not comparing with European countries that have 90 liters per person per day. We need to bring down our 230 to 260, depending on which area you live in, closer to 150. So that's going to be something we have to work on. Now, the reason why we have to do this is not because we are stingy with water, but because Klang Valley is growing. And as the population continues to grow from 5 million to now 7 million and ultimately to 10 million, we have to extract water from further sources. Now, we are taking water from Pahang now, the Sungai Semantan, bringing them to the Langat 2 water treatment plant. But if we continue to consume the same levels that we have been wastefully, because our neighbors can consume lesser amounts without having worse off lifestyles. So if we continue to consume wastefully, water is going to get a lot more expensive because we have to go even further to get the next source of water. So this, we can't get water from Negeri Sembilan. We might have to travel further up into Pahang or further up into Perak. Or someone even said that you might have to go all the way to Terengganu to get the next reliable water source. And that is going to be very, very, very expensive. And so ultimately, we all will pay for it one way or the other if we have to go down to it. So as a society, if we can bring down our consumption in line with the growth of population, we can maintain our existing infrastructure. So the next 5 years, this is important.
Yeah, you have your hands full. Thank you for coming today.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
Rajiv Vishakaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.